I had a lot to prove, mm-hmm. you know, because hmm. of, and this is, again, recognizing this now more so than I did 30 years ago, was I was looking for recognition. I was looking for acceptance. I didn't have a family. I was looking for a family. These are all unconscious, subconscious things that I think drove me in that direction.
Hi, and welcome to all our fellow dads out there. My name is Tom Kingwell, and I'm the host of this podcast. And along with Bert Kutzer, we are the founders of the Dad Syndicate. Here at the Dad Syndicate, we are really stoked about creating a community of men and fathers that want to raise themselves first so they can help their kids become confident and successful and purpose-driven adults, people that take action and contribute to society positively. We don't want to raise kids that have to recover from their childhood, but thrive because of the way we step up and we own our roles as parents and as fathers. So we all know the world needs better fathers. So come and join us on this journey and let's do this. So welcome to the podcast, Brian Rogan. Are you brothers with Joe Rogan?
No, I am not.
Oh, sorry.
Not at all.
It's Grogan.
He's a little bit bigger than me.
Is he bigger than you?
It is.
It is.
Yes, I'm sure he is.
Anyways, welcome to the podcast, Brian Grogan. Finally, we have managed to sort out the gremlins. I was just saying with Alan Placer how long it took him and I to organize podcasts, and now two podcasts in a row. You and I think had even more struggles and tribulations in getting this podcast out there.
I think so.
So I'm sincerely hoping that we actually worked it out. Yeah, we're here. Well, let's not talk too soon. Let's just get going. Let's see how it goes. But anyway, welcome. Where are you exactly stationed? Well, not stationed anymore. Where are you living?
Right. So I'm in Frederick, Maryland, which is about 50 miles northwest of Washington, D.C., just outside the capital.
Is that near the coast or not? I'm not too clued up on
3 hours.
Three hours. Okay.
So depends on how you qualify near.
Okay. Yeah, so give us a little bit of information about yourself, maybe how you grew up, where you grew up, and a little bit of background information.
Well, I was born in San Diego, California, but shortly after that, I moved to Hawaii. My father was an academic and moved around the South Pacific quite a bit, but the home base was always Hawaii. And so about when I was 13 going on 14, I moved back to the Central Coast to California and lived with my grandparents for the remainder of my high school years and the first part of college. But college was a no-go. I just didn't really. College and I didn't take. So, you know, I did the next best thing, which was join the military and went into the SEAL teams not like most folks do today. I knew nothing about it. Somebody told me I could go watch a movie and there was a job where I could swim a lot. It sounded like a great idea since I grew up surfing and swimming, you know.
Oh, really? Wow.
But yeah, so, you know, spent 23 some odd years in the SEAL teams. And towards the end of it, I met my wife and we got married and I had my first child. Well, she had him in 2005.
Thanks for clarifying that. For the
yeah. So, you know, we had our first child, I'll put it that way, back in 2005. So he's 14 now, and we have another one who's 8 years old. So got two boys. And then when I retired from the military for about a year, did a contract job and then found a job out here in Maryland and came out here and been here ever since.
Okay, so
that's short history.
Yeah, so how was that? Just to go back in your life there. So you said you stayed with your grandparents for how many years was that?
About 4 years.
Okay, and how was that? What was that experience like of leaving your parents and staying with your grandparents?
It was good. I mean, you know, one of the rough spots in life was my parents got a divorce when I was about 8 years old, and I found out about it when I was in a room with a bunch of other kids who found out their parents were getting a divorce, and some court appointed person was telling us that our parents were getting a divorce. Wow. So needless to say that, you know, there's a lot of holes there, but moving to live with my grandparents, which were more engaged and more interested in actually trying to raise me, if you will, And not that my parents didn't attempt to, it just kind of looking back now, I realize it fell short. But, you know, both my grandparents were Depression era teenagers. Mm. So they, needless to say, they had a lot of a lot of experience, a lot of background. My grandfather was a, you know, World War II Navy captain of a ship during World War II, different things like that. So a lot of great experience. My grandmother was a teacher. Mm-hmm. They were both teachers. Okay. But she was a elementary and middle school teacher. So yeah, the experience living with them was fantastic and really kind of opened up my world as far as getting outside my shell and, you know, enjoying life. Living in Central California is wonderful too.
I can imagine. So that kind of enhanced your life, in fact, not being with your parents and sure. your grandparents.
Absolutely. Yeah. My dad left, and he actually moved from Hawaii to California, so I didn't see him for a lot of years. And then my mother, who was just, I think, really just trying to survive, kind of disengaged from me and tried to figure out her own life. So I was sort of left to my own devices.
Okay. So do you bear any, like, I mean, I know this is personal, but do you bear any scars from that approach or from how your parents operated in those days?
Well, sure. I think it's really only now, maybe over the last, you know, five or so years that I've really kind of recognized that. But yeah, I think that certainly, you know, an 8-year-old finding out that his parents are getting divorced, not from his own parents or not from a family member.
Wow.
Is one. And then not really getting any answers to any questions or anything and kind of just being left to figure it all out myself. I certainly came up with my own dialogue. And some of that it was all my fault. You know, their divorce was my fault.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot about that. And I mean, I'm also divorced myself. And I think you also divorced from your first marriage. But I just think it's quite interesting that, you know, as men, I also just only really started reflecting on those things in my childhood recently. You know, my parents got divorced much later, but just that we somehow don't reflect on them. I didn't in my 20s. And then I just started recently, like, realizing the impact. And then I could kind of connect the dots and see why certain of my behaviors were as they are, or just some of my emotional states or the way I've been conditioned. So it takes quite a long time sometimes for us. And I think as fathers, it's good to kind of realize that in ourselves. And then if our children do have that, and I mean, at the beginning of the podcast, I often say we want to raise kids that aren't recovering from their childhood, but actually are thriving because of their childhood. And I think that's the mission of the Dad Syndicate. And I think that's the mission of you with your children and me with mine. Sure, we make mistakes, but we definitely want to be, I don't want to have my kids on a podcast one day looking back and going, you know, well, this is what I had to recover from. Did it play a role, do you think, in you joining the SEALs and pushing yourself and doing something that is so extreme? It takes a special kind of guy to first of all, take on that major task and then to actually make it through.
Right. That's a great question. And I think that there's one way to answer that question, and that's the way that you hear a lot. Well, I always wanted to be a Navy SEAL. Uh-huh. Or, you know, I saw a movie, or I read a book, or I met one time. You know, that's what you hear a lot. Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to give you my answer.
Thank you.
and you're welcome. So this is the, you know, the no BS answer here.
Okay, cool.
All right. I had a lot to prove, you know, because of, and this is, again, recognizing this now more so than I did 30 years ago, was I was looking for recognition. I was looking for acceptance. I didn't have a family. I was looking for a family. These are all unconscious, subconscious things that I think drove me in that direction. When I knew or heard about what it was about, this is in the 1980s. There weren't any books. There weren't any movies. It was kind of word of mouth or a legend, fable, if you will, to some extent, right? So it all sounded like something I needed. But it wasn't a conscious effort. Really what I was looking for was acknowledgement and acceptance, right? Mm-hmm. If I could do this, then people would look at me and say, wow, which is something I hadn't had my entire growing up. Growing up in Hawaii, I was a small white kid. And if you know anything about Hawaii, small white kids don't have it easy, you know, so that part of it, kind of breaking out of that shell, was important to me. So I'll tell just a, you know, 30-second story. So I go to boot camp. Some guy says, during lunchtime, you can go and try out for this thing called the SEALs. And you know, they show a movie and I try out for it and I pass it. In fact, during the swim, I finished the swim so fast, they told me I needed to go do it again because there were still, I couldn't have done it that fast because there's still people swimming. So I went and I just did it again. But, you know, I went to Bud's, and when I checked in, there were three other guys in my room. There's, you know, two bunks. So four guys to a room. And all three of these guys the first night were talking about how in second phase they're going to do this and first phase they're going to do that. And at this obstacle course, they're going to do that. And this run, they're going to do this. I had no idea what they were talking about. I didn't know what a phase was. I didn't know some of these terms they were flying around. I didn't know what was going on. And Tom, within 4 weeks, all three of those guys were gone. Mm-hmm. So I figured, you know what? It's probably pretty good I didn't know anything because I had just making it through and just sticking it out. But yeah, that's why I wanted to, I really just in retrospect, that's why I wanted to do it. And, you know, yeah, it's my story.
Yeah, it's just interesting because I think we all have these motivators that lie in the subconscious. And it's interesting listening to you because obviously making it through Buds and becoming a Navy SEAL is quite an achievement, and not quite an achievement. It's for anybody, it's a huge achievement. Just doing SEAL Fit myself, you know, I'm just doing like the basics. And I've obviously seen some movies and seen some YouTube clips and seen what it looks like. And I've read the workout plans. But it's interesting because those things that we are trying to escape from or trying to heal, or we're trying to get that affirmation, although somehow negative on the one hand or somehow positive, because I think that they drove you to then succeed and to actually fulfill that dream, so to speak, or what you wanted to achieve that. And I think that happens to a lot of us, and it's kind of interesting, you know, is it good, is it bad? I'm not sure, because I think that definitely sometimes those what's the word, those holes or those needs in our life do drive us to succeed or to excel.
Right.
So
no, and you're right, it's a matter of perspective.
Yeah. So after that, you then finished the Navy SEALs, and then you were in the SEAL teams for how many years was it?
About 23.
Wow, that's quite a is that relatively quite a long time? It seems to be, because from what I've heard or what I've seen, is that's not such a short time.
Right. You know, and I don't even really know the statistics, to be honest with you. It does seem like a long time. Now, if you want to retire from the military, the minimum is 20 years.
Okay.
So, you know, I hit the 23-year mark and I was kind of looking at moving on, but hung out for three more for various circumstances. But I do have friends who've been well over 30 years.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I don't know whether that's an anomaly. I have to say I've been surprised at four or five friends who are 33, 34, or 35 years, you know, retiring from the SEAL team. Aww. So.
I mean, so it was a massive part of your life, obviously. And so those things drove you to achieve that then created a career that you now can look back on, that you have a mastery over certain aspects and extreme confidence in certain circumstances due to your training and what you've experienced for those 23 years.
To put it in a word, I think it's maybe mastery is a stretch. There are things that I got really good at, and there are things that I wasn't very good at. Mm-hmm. You know, there were, and then that's the strength and weakness of it. Well, that is the strength of a team, right? Mm-hmm. Is there are men on the team that are strong at some things and weak at others, and we all make a solid team. But I would say more so the confidence is in my ability and our ability, my teammates' ability to do, not just say, not talk about, not ponder, but do. Well, I don't know how to build a house, but I'm going to go build a house, and they're going to do it, you know, and that's where the confidence comes in. Sure. I was a sniper for 14 years and I'm fairly confident I could pick up a rifle at any point in time and shoot well.
Okay.
I can't tell you that I'm a master of it because I don't even really understand. I'm not a weapons fanatic, if you will. Right. I don't collect. I'm not really into studying it, but I can shoot it. So I don't consider myself a master only because I think a master is all-encompassing, if you will.
Mm-hmm. True.
So I think the confidence comes from doing and understanding that you can learn and do well. And I think that's important, an important skill.
Being confident in the role as a father and being confident in the role as a husband, as we've discussed, is vital. And as you and I discussed, is that it's sometimes interesting that we don't seem able to transfer that confidence. So for instance, your confidence in right. being able to do as a Navy SEAL and learning to, like you said, if you need to do something, you will do it. And I'm kind of similar to that in that I don't know how to do a podcast. So what do? I just do it. You know, I learn a few things and I get onto it, or the same thing in that I don't know how to transfer that. So you and I were talking a little bit about that and how that confidence translates, or that lack of confidence. How did you find that? Like, you know, how was the confidence that you developed through the SEAL teams showing up in your marriage, and how is it actually lacking in your marriage or lacking in that relationship that it ends up causing issues for yourself that you wouldn't really expect? Because you'd kind of expect, as I would expect, the Navy SEAL has got himself together. He's totally fine. He's obviously, he's sovereign. He's not affected by his wife's right. moods. He's not, his kids are there. He's got them under control. They're all doing what he says. Is that right. the true picture?
Well, you know, and obviously I can only speak for myself, but I think to some degree I am speaking for a percentage of other guys as well. I think we, when I say we, the SEAL team guys, did struggle with that translation. I mean, we're very proficient and very good at what we do. And then we go home and, you know, we're taking out the trash. And our wife is having to tell us to take out the trash, wow. you know, and the kids are annoying the crap out of us, things like that. Now, I have to admit, I was fortunate enough, you know, I didn't have any kids until I was about 2 years from retirement. So I'm taking this from other guys, you know, my yeah, friends yeah. and cohorts. So that's why translation has become very evident to me, is that I was dealing more on a personal level with my wife, thinking that I could handle tough situations. And building a relationship with someone can be tough. And so I should be able to handle it. And when it didn't come easily, based on 23 years of experience of dealing with tough situations, mm-hmm. it broke me. I'll be completely honest. It's wow. like, what happened? I don't understand. Mm. And I think that it was when I finally started, it just kind of came to me a while back, really thinking about Mark Divine and Jocko Willink and folks who are translating their experience in the SEAL teams to other facets of life. And that's where the connection was made. I looked at my wife, I looked at our relationship and said, wait a minute. I have not truly taken the what I know to be true about you know, building something from the SEAL teams and used it. In other words, what I did was I had unrealistic expectations. Well, I'm good at everything, so now I'm good at everything. Mm-hmm. Well, no. Just like everything that I know, going back to the original thing about doing something, the first thing I said was to learn. I had mm-hmm. to learn, and I never learned how to have a relationship. What do I know, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the first things that I connected in Ryan's book was the whole male role model. I'm like, well, shit, I didn't have one of those. Maybe I need to learn what that means. What is that? What is this all about? So the wow. same thing, I think, with the relationship is looking at my wife and going, nobody ever taught me how to have a relationship. In fact, I think my wife was actually trying to, but I was. The other thing that comes along with being a SEAL is a very large ego. And, you know, so that ego is getting in the way. You know.
Wow, man.
Anyway.
So the very thing that serves you.
In a nutshell.
Yeah, the very thing that serves you in certain circumstances can be the downfall in another thing. Because I think being in a relationship with a single person and a woman for that is a totally different thing to being in a SEAL team. So absolutely. Living with SEAL guys all the time, you think you are able to, you know, take the knocks, take the abuse, take whatever. So you think, okay, well, I'm living with one woman, man. This should be fine. This should be a piece of cake.
Right.
Let me go into this. And then you're all of a sudden like, wow, why am I struggling so much with this when I could have taken all that? And I mean, I can't even imagine what you've been through. In 23 years, you must have experienced some serious circumstances and life-threatening circumstances. But then you go into the relationship with a woman and suddenly all bets are off. And not being able to translate that, because yes, I'm not a SEAL, but I've talked about it a few times, because it's so funny. You like you do something and then it relates to so many things in life. So for instance, on the last podcast I talked about also about this moment, because it was quite recent, and it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, but I'm really not, especially talking to a Navy SEAL. But when I saved that woman, I was so calm and collected and able to do it. And it was a life-threatening situation. But come inside to my house and I get criticized by my wife. All of a sudden, I'm falling to pieces. And I'm not able to transfer that total calm where my life was on the line. And I come home in a totally non-threatening situation and I blow up.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is that? You just sit there and ask yourself that, right? Well, I think one of the things that I was going to say, you know, and related to what you're saying is that, you know, what you did was admirable. What you did was important. What you did was stepping outside of the norm, what most people might do or have done. So what comes with that is some, what do you, not an expectation, but you know, when somebody believes that they earned something, they earned the right, whatever, entitlement, right? There's some level of entitlement based on that experience. Well, there's a saying that we had in the SEAL teams, which, you know, was one of the first things I latched back onto was, earn your trident every day. The trident is this, and the emblem, you know, that we wear on our chest that signifies within the military who you are, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about that saying, you earned it, but you have to continue to earn it every single day. So sure, I took out the trash yesterday. So what? Take it out today.
I know, bro.
And tomorrow. And the next 12 days.
And don't count it. And don't bring it up in the conversation. Yeah, don't bring it up. Right. I took the trash out yesterday because that's just going to fall flat.
You want recognition for taking out the trash or doing the things you're supposed to do? Mm. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So earn your trident every day. Do the things that you're supposed to do every single day, regardless of what you did yesterday. Again, you quite literally could have saved the world yesterday. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You know, and I mean, I'm not saying that that it doesn't. What I'm saying is I think it's a mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Looking at things like, well, I've made it. I'm at the top. I'm the best. No, you're not. you were yesterday when you did what you did. Now you're the same guy you were before. You got to move forward. So,
wow, that's amazing, man. That's like, I mean, that really hit me hard now when you say that. It's like that other thing that we might talk about later, but it's just kind of like to think about that. I do. It's so true, man. Like I do these things and then I think they're like a badge of honor. So obviously it's not a trident on my chest, but it's almost like a metaphorical badge of honor. Okay, I did this. I did the triathlon. Oh, I looked after the kids. I looked after my daughter today for 2.5 hours, you know, and I'm saying to my wife, oh, you're calculating, but I'm calculating. You know what I mean? I'm going, I've done 1, 2, 3 things. You should be thankful. And so that entitlement automatically creates a problem because you think that you've stocked up kind of like credit. Whereas it isn't like that. It is showing up every day. And I mean, at the end of the podcast, I always say, be relentless. And sometimes I'm not. But it is that. It's that relentlessness. And actually, it's funny that you mentioned that. When I was doing my SEAL for training this morning, I was thinking about earn that trident every day and the group of guys that I'm leading at the moment and how it is like that every day. How you do have to step out of bed and you got to do it every day because it can fall by the wayside so quickly. And I think it's the same in our relationships with our partners in that we do think we've achieved something and we can just rest on our laurels, but it can so quickly go from, I don't know about you, but I find that it can go from really almost sublime to something, I don't want to say terrible, but it can go to something that's really not working very well in a short amount of time if we don't keep earning that trident, so to speak.
Sure. No, absolutely. I'll tell you, you know, I was laughing when you were talking about that just because I think the kid thing. So I love my kids and always wanted to watch because I'm a big kid at heart. So I just want to play all the time. So, you know, playing with the kids has never been a real problem. However, watching them, right? You know, I'm almost kind of like have the grandparent role. Like, okay, here's your kid back. You know, so, you know, I said that one time, Tom. Okay. Yeah. I said, well, I watch the kids. My wife turns around, looks at me, and says, "What do you want? A fucking cookie?" You know?
I like it.
Yeah, and because what she, you know, and then later retrospect, what she's saying is, "But that's what you're supposed to do. That is your job. Mm-hmm. You don't get a you're not appreciated for the doing the things you're supposed to do, right?" So again, you know, I mean, if we talk about that from being a man, a lot of the things we do are part of our responsibility. Mm-hmm. So to protect, to provide. To preside.
Oh.
Should we be thanked for doing those things? No. I mean, I'm seeing that now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But before I certainly had the perspective, but no. No, it's our job. So do it and keep doing it.
Yeah, I know.
That's my thought.
No, I think I agree completely, but maybe you also understand this part, or you've seen this as well, is that so many men are not doing that. And so what we do is we start judging ourselves by the norm, the common. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of dads that I know that are not at home, that are not looking after the kids, that are not doing those three roles, that are not performing in that way. And so what we do is we think, well, compared to those guys, I'm kicking ass. I'm really a great father. I'm looking after kids. So we almost count that as, like you said, we are doing things that are just regular things because other guys are not doing that. Instead of actually standing by the standard that we set for ourselves, in that we say, these are the roles that a father should be doing. And I mean, I know those things and you know them, but still we say what you said. I watched the kids, or I helped you with the kids. Why are we helping with our own children? You can't really help someone with something that is your responsibility. Do you know what I mean? It's your responsibility. Right. Someone else helps you. And I often find myself, I helped with the kids, or I'm helping, and then I expect these kudos. And I think it's because so many dads are not showing up. I mean, hence the reason for the Dad Syndicate, hence the reason for the Order of Man, and that so many men don't stand up. And it's quite shocking for me to look around at some of these other men. And the problem is, then I start putting myself in a pedestal to a degree and go, wow, I'm doing that. I'm taking my kids in the nature. I'm doing that. I'm making breakfast. I'm making dinner. I'm putting the kids to sleep. And it's like, dude, that's what you're supposed to do, you know? And my wife obviously sees it that way as well. So it leads to these small conflicts, or these small misunderstandings, or roles where I do feel entitled. And like, that's what's so cool about what you said about the Trident is, you know, I need to wake up every morning. And all you dads out there, we need to wake up every morning. And like the Navy SEALs, okay, maybe it's not a Trident, but we need to earn that thing every day. You know, we are blessed. We're lucky to have our wives. We're lucky to have our children. I think sometimes we take it for granted and think we should be almost have our own our cake and eat it, while everybody else should kind of just run around us. And I think that it's definitely something that would help to give us the more satisfaction in our relationships. So onto the relationship part. I mean, when our spouses do something in our eyes wrong, often we can feel justified in then being upset. However, it doesn't really move us forward anyway. And that's where the confidence that we can transfer, hopefully, from some of these experiences into our relationships. So how would you say we could deal with those times when we are being criticized, when maybe our spouse is being unfair and unjust to us, but still remain in that state where we are being sovereign, so to speak?
Sure. Well, I mean, to you know, since we're drawing this correlation and talking about translation, correlation between the SEAL teams and kind of real life.
Yeah. There's so many, aren't there?
Right. I think that one of the things that would be probably one of the best examples I could come up with was, so, you know, you're familiar with the term a kill house, right? That's where we're simulating going into a house and clearing a house where there might be some bad folks or something like that. Or we're not simulating, actually going into to an assault facility or something like that. So in that situation, you know you have your brothers with you. You know you have your teammates with you. You know you've planned. You know you've trained. You know you've done everything you possibly could to be ready for that situation, but it's not going to go as planned. It's 100% guarantee it's not going to go as planned. So how do you deal with those situations when they arise? Do you freak out and run around like you got, you know, caught your hair on fire? Or do you take a breath, relax, focus, stay in the moment, and not own that situation, not own what's going on? It is an external situation to you. It's not you personally, right? Okay, so, you know, one of the guys gets shot, one of the guys gets hurt, one of the teams goes left versus right, you know, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a reflection of you. It is an external situation. So, you know, to bring it back home, my wife gets upset about something and is angry with me. It's not me. I don't have to own her emotion. I can own my part, the role I played, what I did, the same way I'm going to own my role that I, you know, didn't make sure my guys went right instead of left or whichever way it was. Mm-hmm. If that was my responsibility, I can't own her emotions. Same with the children. Same with my boys. You know, so I mean, that's just one of many, many potentials. Is really diving in the pool with someone else. You know, if someone goes down and it's like my best friend, I can't jump in the pool with him right now because more people are going to die. More people are going to get in trouble. You know, so what do I do? You know, some people talk about compartmentalization. Put things in compartments.
Was that
there
right?
You go.
Compartmentalize.
Thank you. Yes. Mm. Right. I had the Asian on the end. I couldn't do that part.
Compartmentalization. Wow. That is quite a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. So, you know, I know that when it comes to speaking to fighter pilots and, you know, people that do multiple things essentially all at the same time, that sort of false multitasking concept, you know, that they can put things aside. No, it's all in there. It's mm-hmm. all happening. It's just which one you prioritized as the most important, and then how you owned that, in my mind. So, you know, I mean, just yesterday, the wife and I are going back and forth on something, and my witness, that mm-hmm. my other person, that other voice in my head is telling me, going, "Don't own it. Don't own it. Just yeah. don't get emotionally invested in this situation." Yeah. Stay objective. And mm-hmm. again, like I said, if you plan everything and have high expectations, everything's going to go perfectly. And when does it ever go perfectly with your wife? Never. Okay. When does
it? let's cut that out of this.
Right. When does it ever go perfectly? You yeah. know, going into
well, to plan. Yeah.
An op like that. It's never going to go perfectly. So.
Is that what Mark Divine talks about? A good enough plan. Is that what it refers to? Is that you can make a plan, but you can never have a perfect plan, basically, because it's never going to go that way. But a good enough plan is a plan that you can come up that's going to work in that situation enough.
Right.
Is that what he's talking right. about?
Yeah, because there are just so many variables, mm-hmm. Especially in that job. There were many variables. So, yeah, you've got to make a plan. So, you know, we used to have a 96-hour planning cycle. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, those 96 hour planning cycles sometimes turned into 4 months. I mean, sometimes they were just ridiculous.
Wow.
Trying to plan everything out of a particular operation. And then, you know, 9/11 hits, 2001, you know, we start going into Iraq and Afghanistan, and all of a sudden guys are making plans in 10 minutes on the front of the Hummer and going, "All right, this is good enough. Let's go."
Wow.
Well, that changed the perspective. It goes exactly to your point. Mm-hmm. Is this good enough? Based on what we're doing, is it good enough? Yep, it's good enough because we got to go right now. Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly right? like that with our wives. I mean, we can do long-term plans, but most of it happens in the moment with them because you really can't predict them at all.
Sure.
As far as I can see.
No. right. And I mean, what is one of the things, you know, the Stoics really focus on is embracing uncertainty, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, your wife is an uncertain entity. Mm-hmm. As well as we are for them. I mean, we can just make decisions in our own brains and have a complete dialogue about something and never let them in on Dude. It and go forward.
Bro, that's exactly, you just like read my life here. I have so many problems. My wife's like, "You didn't tell me about this." I'm like, "Didn't I? I thought I," because I had like done the whole thing in my head, and the next thing I'm doing something and I think I've like informed her, but I haven't said anything about it. And
I'll let you in on a little secret, Tom. When she asked me that, "Oh no, yeah, I did. I told you." Of course, I know it's a flat out lie. And of course, she's looking at me because she's too damn smart. Like, "You liar."
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's very interesting because when you obviously were in Afghanistan or Iraq or in those situations, you probably stayed cool. However, then you come into a situation, as I said, with just the normal everyday situation. And then you get that criticism. So you and I talked a little bit about how the guys were ragging you and how you used to basically in the SEAL teams, it's almost like expected. And I've read a few things about it that it's expected for people to rag you, that you actually don't trust anybody unless you... they can take a joke and they can rag you and break you down to a degree, and that you have to build this self-confidence within yourself. And we talked about that last time. So I don't know if you want to talk about that quickly, because that was one of the most impactful things from our conversation the last time we talked about.
Yeah, I think I do. And I think that I think it's infinitely important, both spousal relationship and as a father, you know, the basically knowing yourself.
That's it.
Okay. I can tell you that when I went into the SEAL teams, I didn't know myself. I didn't really have any opportunity, because when you spend a lot of time by yourself, there's no reason to know yourself. or at least in my mind, at least the way I was brought up. So going into the SEAL teams where that is sort of the common norm, anything that is that you do, say, wear, whatever, is going to get a comment from someone. I guarantee it. Someone is going to tear you up. All right. Trying it, you know, it's like high school times 20 when it comes to you wearing something that is not fashionable, you know. It is just, you know, you go left when you're supposed to go right and you're a new guy, you are going to get it from everyone. So how do you defend, for lack of a better word, against that? Well, you can't defend yourself, because if you defend yourself verbally, you're going to get five people are going to be on top of you, right? That person's going to go after you.
Interesting.
And so you quickly realize that all you've established, all you've demonstrated is your insecurity by engaging, right?
Wow.
So you have to know yourself. You have to be secure in yourself. Mm-hmm. And that is the greatest thing that one of the greatest things that I learned through the SEAL teams, which I did not learn as a child, was to be more secure in myself, in that environment, right? Not giving a crap if I'm wearing something or carrying something or doing something different and somebody gives me some crap for it, just not caring about it. Or also, which is the other thing, is taking that into consideration. Why are they keep criticizing me about this? Is it something real? Are they trying to tell me something? That goes back to knowing it, right? That goes back to knowing yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
If you know yourself, then you can have perspective. If you don't know yourself, you can't have perspective, because you're just caught up in all your emotions and your insecurities and all that stuff. So in a lot of ways, the SEAL team completely beats that out of you, which I will caveat with saying that that's that translation part, though, right? When I met my wife, then I established a whole new series of insecurities.
Wow.
A whole new set of insecurities that I had boxed up and put away in the way back of my brain, because I didn't deal with personal relationships, came out. Okay. So I had in the forefront for 23 years dealing with these things that are very important to SEAL team guys. All of that relationship stuff is not important to the SEAL team guys. So I boxed it up, put it away. Trying to translate that understanding of self to myself with my wife.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating for me. It's fascinating for me to see someone that can go into those situations where you're making these life and death decisions and life and death situations, and that doesn't automatically translate into that situation. As I said earlier, I would kind of expect it to be like that. You just think that is the calm in the middle of the storm. That's the stoic warrior kind of thing. And he'll just go into his marriage and it'll all be okay. And that's the interesting thing, is that you said it's a different box. It's like you get used to they're criticizing me this and this, but it's mostly outward things, because it's basically based on your actions. When you get into a marriage, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it becomes a more emotional thing, a more relational thing, and how you're relating is more important. And I think in the SEAL teams, I think that it must be very rigid in what you do and when you do it and how you do it. Whereas in a marriage, all bets are off once again with those kind of things. There's no rule book. There's no manual for your wife. There's no manual for exactly what to do. I mean, I can think I'm doing exactly what I should do one day, and it might be perfect that day, but the next day it will not be perfect. And so did you see that at all, that it's so much more, I don't mean unpredictable in that obviously when you go into battle and these kind of things and operations, it's unpredictable in that way. But I mean, in the day-to-day, it seems to elude me a lot of the times, because I then always react to the situation, and I do own it. I often own the issues going on. So if my kids are misbehaving, it's almost like an automatic reaction to, oh, that's a reflection on me. Or if my wife thinks something or criticizes me, oh, that's a reflection on me, or she's angry with me, or she's not feeling good, I will own that. And it's quite interesting, because it's kind of the opposite of that extreme ownership. So when you said, oh, you shouldn't own it, I was kind of like, huh, at first. And then I realized what you meant is that you want to own what you do. You want to own what you have control of. But I think when you start to own the things you don't have control of, then you start to get swept away or swept up with other people's feelings. And I think that is the whole thing is to, and that's where knowing yourself comes into play, because then you go, oh, I know myself. I know what I can control. I know what I need to control. And I know what lies outside of myself. So it's also maybe defining that line and being, and when you know yourself, you can define that line much more easily, because when I don't know myself, I'm taking everything else onto me as part of myself, whereas it's actually not part of myself. And getting offended and getting my back up about those things or getting more frustrated, whereas, you know, when I actually look at myself and I look at myself objectively, like you said, it's a completely different picture.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
I don't ramble on too much there. I don't like doing that on a podcast. It's about you. It's not about me.
No, absolutely. No, it's good stuff. Yeah. Real good stuff.
So are you finding that you are getting there? I mean, how long have you been married now to your wife?
So this September will be 16 years.
Okay.
So we've been together a while. But yeah, I mean, first 3-4 years were good. Mm-hmm. But I think we were ignoring a lot. Then children come into the mix. Then the second child comes into the mix. You know, all those things. Just everything kind of piles up, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say 10 years of that have been rough. Maybe seven of those particularly rough. Mm-hmm. And it's only been as of recent that things have been getting better, if you will. But it, you know, I think the amazing thing is the revelation. When the revelation happens and how quickly things can turn.
Isn't that interesting?
You know, when you start to really put these things in perspective, I mean, all the things I'm talking about and we're talking about are things that I'm still kind of, like you said, that's why I threw out the earn your trident every day, is because, man, I'm having to wake up every single day, all day long, reminding myself of every single one of these things. Because I believe I was a complete addict to all of this crap. And yet at the same time, I've seen significant changes. Now, when I say significant, in other words, important, I guess important would be a better word. They might be small, but they're important. You know, the fact that my wife and I can actually have a conversation with each other without all the crap surrounding it. It's huge. It may seem really simple to some folks, but I would challenge a lot of men and husbands to actually think about having a real conversation with them. Not trivial crap, not talking about stuff. I mean, hey, what do you think we should do over the next 5 years? And really have that conversation where it doesn't break down into, well, you're never going to do this and I'm never going to do that and you don't like this and I don't like that and I hate you too, goodbye. No, no, no. Actually open up and be honest about, well, I don't think we're going to be together in the next 5 years.
Wow.
Well, why do you feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel that way because of this. Well, then that seems like something we should be working on. We should. Mm. How do you think we should go about that? Notice there's no emotion in that, right? We're just talking. So, you know, I think that's the other aspect of that. And that's, again, a translation. A lot of times when we do an after action report in the SEAL teams, there's some guys, man, myself included, I will admit it, who got their dander up, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, Brian, you should have done this. No, you should have done that. Oh, my God, you got to be kidding me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing, again, we're talking about kind of focusing on that translation, is you're looking at that after action report. It is one of the greatest opportunities to learn.
Mm.
Well, we failed, okay? Well, we won over here. Well, so what? We failed over here. This is where we need to focus, right? We need to focus on what we need to do to improve. Okay, so I just had an argument with my wife, so I failed. But what did I not do in that argument that I could have done better? And how am I going to fix that, work on that for the next time? How am I going to recognize the triggers, the, you know, the different things that are going on? What didn't I notice?
Mm.
Oh, she just got off the phone and had an argument with her dad. And then she's yelling at me. And now I'm arguing with her. Why didn't I just step back and realize she's not mad at me? She's mad at her dad. I just happened to be the object of her angst at that point in time. You know, things like that, right? Just to use an example of that focus. And the same thing went with the after action report. Okay, so you were supposed to go on right and you went left. What happened? I forgot. Okay, well, what can we do to help you remember how to do this, that, and the other thing? well, when we're in training, let's do this, that. I do want to back up, Tom, to one other thing that you touched on earlier, and just kind of talk about that uncertainty a little bit, if that's all right.
Of course.
Is you hit at a really important point. So in the SEAL teams, there is a lot of uncertainty, and there's even uncertainty within a group of men. Let's say a platoon is 15 to 18 guys, somewhere in there, okay? Sort of that magic number, right? We work for 2 years with each other. We do a lot of stuff. We're close to each other. And in that time, we get to know each other. And although we know that all of us have different personalities and different backgrounds and just different everything, the expectation is that when we come game day, to use a sports analogy, we'll bring it. We're going to bring what we need to that and leave our personalities behind to some extent. So that alleviates some of the uncertainty, some of the individual personality-driven or emotionally-driven uncertainty, right? So we can leave that at back somewhere. Then, of course, we've got the uncertainty of the mission, and that's just a given. We know that. We've planned, we've trained, we've done, you know, we've done this particular movement thousands and thousands and thousands of times, right? You know the American Sniper guy, Chris Kyle, right? He was a SEAL Team 3. I was at SEAL Team 3. And,
oh, really?
And, wow. You know, one of the things I always loved about Chris was, you know, he's such a straightforward, humble guy, was that, you know, he was talking to a infantry, like a Marine infantry guy, and he goes, you know, the guy's like, oh, man, it's amazing how you do that stuff. I never could do any of that kind of stuff. And Chris is just like, dude, the only difference, and I think this is in his book as well, you know, I'm paraphrasing to some extent, but, you know, dude, there's really no difference between you and me. I just get to do this hundreds of thousands of times. So I'm good at it, right? I do this over and over and over. So taking that understanding of uncertainty and flipping it on its head and saying, I know that my wife's character and personality and emotions are potentially uncertain for me. But if I flip it on its head and say, I'm going to approach this like that mission, and I'm going to have a plan, and I'm going to assume the plan is going to change along the way. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to train myself to eliminate as much of the uncertainty on my part as I possibly can. And therefore I can embrace the uncertainty on the other end, which is, again, is essentially what SEAL team guys do pretty well. And I think why, you know, one of the major reasons why they succeed is because knowing that going in, I'm well trained, I'm ready, and I'm willing to embrace that uncertainty, and it's okay.
Yeah. Wow. So it's basically embracing uncertainty by being certain in your own actions and your own ability as far as possible.
And
adding more certainty to what you are doing, because then you obviously lessen the effect. Because when we come in uncertain, which we really are often in these situations, and you've lived through, if you obviously went through a difficult relationship, is that we then bring our own uncertainty, and just, I think it multiplies the uncertainty, you know?
Sure.
I don't know if you agree with
that. Right. Oh, yeah. Then you create your own uncertainties. Mm-hmm. You create, it just piles on.
Yeah.
Doesn't get any better.
I think that's the point in the end. I mean, to bring it around is, or to bring it all together is just, is to start increasing the certainty with which we behave. There are days when I feel really in control in these things, and then there's other days when I haven't slept well, or you know, the baby's been up, or, you know what I mean, drank too much coffee even, or whatever, or haven't worked out for a while, and or got an injury, and then I've got a shorter fuse. And I think that's what it is to eliminate all these uncertain things and not to rely on the uncertainty. As I always say, don't have these expectations and have acceptations, if that's even a word. So accept, don't expect.
I like it.
Acceptations. But that's one of my little things that I'm trying to work on. I'm not getting it right, but, you know, Joshua Laycock talks about it as well. You know, don't have these expectations. Accept what's going on. And I think that's why it's so important as a man, in any situation, as a person, to have these core values, because you bring predictability and you bring that stability. And I know a lot of people, you know, we talk about freedom and things, but I mean, it's the same as Jocko says, you know, discipline equals freedom, as Aristotle said the same thing, you know. So you bring discipline in your mornings, you bring discipline in the way that you approach your kids, in yourself. I'm not talking about disciplining them, but I think when we are disciplined, we bring that into our marriage. And I'm talking as though I know what I'm talking about, but, you know, the application is much harder. Right. And it's funny that it was easier for you in the SEALs, and that to translate that into a marriage is difficult. But I think it is possible. Do you think it's possible to then translate those things? And are you winning at that game? Or like you're saying, you're waking up every day and reminding yourself to earn that. We maybe should come up with a phrase that's kind of similar to that, earn your something else than a trident for dads. But it is the same. And I think it's something that I mean, this when I spoke to you last time, I was so excited because there were so many takeaways. I'm just going to wrap them up just now. But would you agree that you are able to do that? And are you finding it easier now? I know it's been, you were there a long time. And obviously, you've been through quite a few rough years. But are you finding that that's paying dividends now? That some of the lessons from being in the SEALs are definitely helping you now?
Yeah, I think it's... The thing is, if I hadn't had that experience... Now, of course, we can't go back when what experience would I have had I not had that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, at my current state prior to going in the military, I would say I probably wouldn't have been as successful, if you will. I measure success differently, I think, than a lot of other folks, but that's fine. But... Taking what I know and being here now is awesome because I've been able to get to the point now. So somebody put up on a post or something like that, you know, if a billboard fell on you today and you died, you know, where would you be, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, it's like there have been years where I'd be like mad because I didn't do the things I wanted to do, or people were holding me back, or all this other junk, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm able to sit here now and say to myself, no, I'm good. I'm good. I'm only at the beginning, really, in my mind, of this journey of translating my previous life to my current and future life. But I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that because you know what I did was I did it. Even however little, I've done it. I realize it. I see it. My eyes are open. The blinders are off. You know, I'm ready to go in the ring and fight mm-hmm. where I wasn't there. And I hadn't made that translation. And if somebody were to do a, you know, if I were to write my own eulogy or whatever it's called, right? Mm-hmm. I'd have to say that I failed in making that translation. Mm-hmm. Where now I can say I succeeded in making that translation.
Yeah.
And that's important. It's important for me to know that I did that. Did that for the sake of my children. Mm. Did that for the sake of my wife. You know, and did that for the sake of myself as well. So,
yeah, I think it's the whole mission that we have at the Dad Syndicate, and I as a person, is to help people as early as possible to wake up to those realities. You know, I hope for myself, and I'm really working on it like you are, and I've seen quite drastic changes in 6 months. And like you say, that the changes are small, but they have like a huge impact. Just these small changes within ourselves as men and these realizations, they really have a huge impact. But I think, you know, there's no time to waste. It is vital. You know, we've got these little kids watching us every day, and having four just wake my eyes up to, or woken me up to the fact that, you know, every day I'm making this huge impact in their lives, and whether it's negative or positive, and I need to get my shit together. You know, I need to step up. I need to do a buds on myself as far as my emotions go. Right. You know, whatever it takes, I want to do that. I don't want to be that man that looks back and goes, oh, you know, jeepers, I wasted a lot of time. And I'm 41 now, and I'm sure at your age as well, you want to look back, you want to look at it now and say, we did it now, you know. And I think anybody listening out there, do it now. You know, but it takes a lot of work to make those small changes. It's very interesting. Like the change of the needle is not that much, but kind of the work that goes into changing yourself and to really change those conditioned things that we've been conditioned since we were children, it can take a lot of work. And so I encourage every guy out there just to really do those things. And as you've talked about it, is to step out of the norm and stop doing things like everybody else does them. And also not to let yourselves be fooled into having a sense of entitlement as a man and as a father, that you deserve kudos, that you deserve praise, that you deserve, you know, a time off, that you deserve that trip. You don't deserve anything. And doing things that you're meant to do is not something you should receive praise for. And I think that sense of entitlement often results in these problems, because we then get upset because we think that someone's standing in the way of us getting what we want. And then it ends up bringing unhappiness, because when your kids and your wife are not living or living good lives or aren't happy, it automatically affects you more than anything in your life. And then I think what Brian was saying, that I think we did definitely, and Brian, this is one thing I'm gonna remind myself of, is earn that trident every day. So following on from the entitlement, no, it's not about you deserve kudos. You need to do it every day. No use taking out the trash yesterday and then leaving it for 6 days. Oh, I took it out 6 days ago. No, every day you wake up in the morning, you take that discipline, you make sure that you're getting yourself into the position where you can be that positive impact. And that starts getting up in the morning and realizing that and being very conscious. And as I've said in other podcasts, being intentional. So earn that trident. And we'll try to come up with a saying for the Dad Syndicate that relates to that, because I think it's quite important. But, you know, that relates to that mindset. You haven't made it. And I don't think as people we ever really do make it. We kind of rob ourselves and our family of those better things that are waiting for us. And then we can also fall back into situations which aren't good. And the other thing I like that you said was that kill house, that you know 100% that it's not going to go as planned. We want to control things and we want to make sure that everything's going to go as we planned. And when it starts going out of whack, we start ruining the whole entire plan. And what I did like as well, man, and I know I'm going on here about, but this is all the things that you talked about that I really liked. There's so many of them, is don't own other people's emotions. You know, own your own emotions. Stay there. Realize the difference and the distinction between things that you own and that you should be extreme ownership about, and the things that you don't own. You don't own other people's feelings. We don't own our kids. We don't own our wives. We only own ourselves, and we need to know what are the things that I can own. There's so much uncertainty surrounding us, and we can't predict what our wives are going to do. We can't predict what our children are going to do. However, we can predict what we're going to do and be that certainty, be that calm, know what we are going to do and lessen the uncertainty instead of coming there with that uncertain approach ourselves and then sending things into even worse off kilter and multiply that. And then I'm going to end off with the wisdom that you've shared with me today that has really impacted me last time and impacts me the same, which is know yourself. Know who you are. Know what you're capable of. Know when you're right. Know when you're wrong, but don't be affected when other people or your wife or your children maybe say something that is a criticism. And if it's something that you've done wrong, you look at it, you do an after-action review or post-mortem, and you think, what can I do better tomorrow? When I know myself and I've done a good job and I'm satisfied with that, then what anybody says to me won't matter. When we defend ourselves, it almost like makes things worse or does make things worse. So know yourself, don't defend. And I'm sure everybody else learned from that, Brian. I really love talking to you. I know that I need to listen to the podcast myself again and my notes that I made and really get on top of those things, because I don't want to wait a second longer and live with this behavior and this weakness that we have and these insecurities and this uncertainty that we have in ourselves and then basically make our lives harder than if we actually just, you know, settle back into it and go, you know what? Like you said, I'm good. I mean, that's what we want as a man, to be able to say, I'm good.
Right.
And then be able to help those people in our lives that maybe are going through something. So any last words? Sounds like a funeral as well. Sorry.
<That's right>.
any last words of wisdom you want to share with everybody out there? It's been really cool talking to you. Your voice sounds really good on this microphone, by the way.
Thank you. Oh, I sound very sexy.
You got a good voice for radio or for podcast, I must say.
No, well, thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it. This has been an honor, and I'm humbled by the request to be able to do this. So this has been a lot of fun. I think that it's just to recognize that it's a journey. You know, I think that's the thing, is that my whole life has been a series of ups and downs, and they're all there for a reason. They're all there because I'm here today doing what I'm doing, and I'm just, you know, I'm just happy. I'm just happy to be in this life, and hope everybody else can get to that point as well.
I know. Well, yeah, I much appreciate it. I mean, it's an honor to talk to you. I mean, I've obviously seen movies and heard about Navy SEALs for a while, so it's kind of a little bit surreal at this moment. So I really appreciate you for being honest and open and telling us a little bit about your life and giving us an insight into someone that's had a bit of experience in life. And obviously your experiences in the SEALs are fascinating and interesting to hear about. But then most of all, that you've given us an insight into your relationship, a very personal thing, and hopefully helped us to take those things on board and to affect our relationships better. So once again, thanks, man. We finally reached the end of the podcast. It's been quite a long one, man. There's just so much I want to ask you.
Sure. Well, we'll do it again.
Yeah. Awesome. And thanks to all of those who tuned in and listened to this podcast. We really appreciate it. We also appreciate your support. So please go check us out on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and on our website that's getting developed nicely a little bit further by Bert, my partner, on www.thedadsyndicate.com. And always keep in mind that all the time, energy, and hard work that you put into being the man that your family need and deserve is always going to be worth it. So be relentless.